Pod, we're back.
Okay.
That was hilarious.
That was a lot. As someone didn't forget to point, I did not forget to tell me the last episode. I forgot to say welcome to his story time. Story time with a historical precedent. Yeah, but I did say that this episode.
Yeah.
I also strummed a very out-of-tune guitar. We're just trying all sorts of new things, aren't we, Catherine?
Yeah, so right before we started filming, Blake was like, hold on, I'm gonna grab the guitar. I'm like, why? And he's like, just wait. And then he's like, say, hey, pod. And I'm like, okay. So I said, hey, pod. And then he trills the guitar. It works.
It's the guitar
for me. I kind of like it.
Mm-hmm. I really like that last one. That last one's just really out there. Okay, this is a history podcast, so we're doing a great job. Some things never change, and one of those things that does never change is the fact that Catherine and I are both in a constant state of being stressed.
Yep.
Catherine, what are you stressed about?
Apparently I'm stressed about school. Something about going back to school during a pandemic isn't my favorite thing. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is about that one.
Tell the kids at home the name of your senior group chat.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny. I laugh every single time. Our senior group chat is called Must Be 21 to Enter, because I'm class of 2021.
Yep.
And I just thought that was the most creative thing ever. So.
And, I feel bad for them because they're going to live in the shadow of the class of 2020.
Because, in the shadow.
Because we're the ones, like, where the pandemic, like, started.
Okay,
but they're the ones who, like, actually had to, like, go back to school with the pandemic.
Yeah. Okay, this is, like, seriously, my theory is we're going to be there for, like, 2 weeks. And then they're going to realize, oh my gosh, we are killing the children. And then... Yeah.
You see, that's what I'm worried about, except I'm moving across the country.
Yeah.
So,
Oh, yeah. That's not good.
Minor things. And then I'd be like, oh, how do I move home? It's a whole deal. But we're gonna see what happens. I thought it was funny, too. My friend Eliza on Twitter, she has a tweet. in the last episode, we kind of dragged Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, for her...
Choices,
and just her overall inability to, like, help the situation or, like, defend her opinions at all with logic or sound reasoning. So, my friend Eliza, back to her, she had a tweet that said, 3 out of my 4 parents are teachers, and that makes me more qualified to be Secretary of Education than Betsy DeVos. Which...
Did she tell a lie?
Where's the lie?
I do not see it.
It's the lack of an education degree or formal education.
For me. That's what it is.
For me, yeah. Like, education surroundings. So, yeah. This has been our COVID corner for today. Do we have any recommendations, Catherine?
Recommendations? Well, did I mention that I was reading Kant the last time? Or no?
I don't know. Well, she's reading Kant. She's reading Kant.
Okay, yeah, so
I... One sentence is 20 pages.
Right, and I kind of want to die. Somebody told me that I probably shouldn't start my journey into philosophy and political philosophy with Kant, and so I started with him.
Start with, like, a Hobbes or a Locke or, like, one of the...
Or,
like, a Jean-Jacques Rousseau.
No, I really could have, but did I? No. So yeah, wish me luck. I picked up a couple books yesterday, one of them being called The End of the Free Market or something like that.
Oh.
And it talks about the struggle between state and corporations, so I'm excited to read that. And then I also picked up another book called American oh my god, I don't know how to say the word, hegemony.
Oh, yeah,
that's a thing. And if you know what that means, it's basically, like, you know, American power, or, like, American prestige, which has been established since World War II, like, what comes after it. So, you know, we're excited. They're not really recommendations, more so just, like, updates.
Yeah. I have a recommendation. I finished the memoir Boy Erased. It's pretty good. But then, now, I'm reading the Pulitzer Prize winning, All the Light We Cannot See. That is a good book. It's a novel by Anthony Doerr, D-O-E-R-R. So mm-hmm. good so far. I'm only, like, 60 pages in, but, like, already I'm just, like, here for, like, the tiny details and, like, the way he, like, sets his scenes and his characters and, like, ooh, okay, yeah. Good recommendation from me if you're interested. Also worth noting, this is our second try at the intro.
Oh, yeah, that's really worth noting. This might not be the last one.
This might not be the last one with how this is going, but you know, can always fix this.
Do it.
Catherine looks up. She sees me holding this guitar, and you know what happens when Blake holds his guitar. You hear.
Yes.
Yep. She do. And yeah, this is that. Speaking of being a history podcast, what are we talking about today, Catherine? I think I'll finally tell you.
Oh, great. Thank you for that. So today we're going to be talking about what I presume to be very different subjects. Yep. I'm going to be talking about the history of the United Nations. And I just want to let you know, the only reason that I am talking about the United Nations at this moment in time is because I want to label this episode Mr. Worldwide.
Which I'm okay with.
That's, and then, like, my only prerequisite to this. I was like,
and then the link here... She told me that this episode title is going to be called Mr. Worldwide, and I was thinking, I was like, okay, well, like, is there a man that just really got around?
Oh my gosh. Wait.
Catherine knows where this is going.
That's so good.
I said, there's a man who just, like, really got around, and I'm, of course, talking about the somewhat beloved, for all the wrong reasons, King Henry VIII of England. Not my boy, because I hate him. Wow. But I'm talking about one of his wives in particular. I will not reveal which one yet, but arguably the most famous wife. Yeah. And yeah, wow. Get ready to learn some things about a man who is
really
the original. Is the let's learn about the original homewrecker in the eyes of the Catholic Church. So yeah, that's what I'm talking about today. Another thing, since we are so good at making podcasts, Catherine, do you have a quote you'd like to share?
Yes, and it took me a super long time to find it last time.
You see, the funny thing was, the first time we did this, we forgot about the quote, so then I tried to stall, in which I'm going to tell them what I stalled last time, because I think it's provocative.
Okay.
So, as Catherine looks this quote up, I think it's funny. Let's talk about the way this podcast gets made. There is a text sent out from either Catherine or myself, somewhere between 12:45 and 2 a.m. in the morning. I widened the window from the last time I said it, because it really is just, it's just very late. And we always respond. Always, always, always. Because we're always awake at the time. And it's like, hey, do you want to pod tomorrow? And then the person's either like, yes, or it's like, no, the next day. And that's how that goes down. And then, like, the rest is history. It's like, come over, like, 3 or 4 or something. And then we pod. And that is the story of the birth of his story time. So yeah, Catherine, yes. quote it out.
Right, so this quote is from John F. Kennedy.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, quote, those who dare to fail miserably can achieve greatly. And that's on looking up a random quote at a random time. Those who dare to fail miserably can achieve greatly.
Let us not
apply. That's powerful. Wait, no, like, process it quick. Those who dare to fail miserably can achieve greatly.
Let's not apply that to the reopening of schools in the country.
Yes.
Let's just take those words, two separate ideas.
Maybe I should have been more topical with that one.
The funny thing was, when we did this the first time, it was a Walt Disney quote. And it was just
and
like...
And then I couldn't find it again.
And then it was just kind of powerful. But, you know, it is what it is. And this is his story time. And without further ado, let's just get started. Grab your snacks, relax, and enjoy this episode of His Story Time. How do I turn this off after that? How do we end on that? Okay, welcome back. We hope you have your snacks and everything, so buckle in for the story of Britain's least favorite, or not Britain, at the time it's Mother England, but it's the story of their least favorite homewrecker. We're of course talking about Anne Boleyn, air horn noises. She was a queen. So like literally, I'm not saying that to like support her. So she's the most famous. This I got off the internet, but it's an opinion, but it arguably is right. Anne Boleyn is the most famous of King Henry VIII's six wives.
Mm-hmm.
Executed by a French swordsman on the 19th of May, 1536, after being arrested for charges such as adultery and incest.
Oh.
So, let's dive in. Let's figure out what went wrong.
Yep.
So, Anne Boleyn and her family, come back from the French court, and they returned to England in 1522 to be a part of King Henry's court, and Anne becomes a maid of honor in the court of Queen Catherine of Aragon at the time. Fun fact, Catherine of Aragon is the daughter of the king and queen, Isabel and Ferdinand, mm-hmm. that commissioned Columbus's voyage.
Yes.
I mean, no, we hate Columbus. We don't like Columbus on this pod. He is not a friend of the pod.
No.
You know who is a friend of the pod, though?
Who?
I don't know. We'll figure it out. I don't know why I said that.
We don't have a protagonist.
We don't have a protagonist. So. Does history have a protagonist? Okay, we're getting way off topic.
Okay.
So, like, in the court, she becomes, like, beloved by everyone, okay? Everyone loves this pretty little Anne Boleyn girl. One description of a website said she had this, like, long, dark, beautiful hair, and these eyes that were so brown, they were almost black. And she had this unconventional beauty about her. I've also read other places she had, there were rumors she had an extra finger. That was denied, but there were, I think it was more confirmed that she had an extra toenail, or not an extra toenail, an extra nail on her pinky.
Oh,
But still, everyone loves her, and they think she's beautiful. She becomes beloved by the court, and this guy named Lord Henry Percy tries to cuff Anne Boleyn, and then all of a sudden, the King of England steps in and goes, no!
Oh, I wonder why.
Don't do that to the young, beautiful woman. It's also funny, Anne has a sister named Mary, and Mary is the one to introduce Anne to the king in 1525.
Oh, Lord.
Which, there's conspiracy that Mary had an affair with King Henry VIII, and there's conspiracy that Anne and Mary's mother had an affair with King Henry VIII.
Talk about keeping it in the family.
So Henry gets all this hype, and he's like... And at this time, he's getting frustrated because Catherine of Aragon can't provide him the son he so desperately wants. So, in this courtship, pun intended, the king starts writing to Anne, and this is a quote. It's a letter. If you, give yourself up, heart, body, and soul to me, I will take you for my only mistress, rejecting from thought and affection all others save yourself. To serve only you. Boleyn replies with a rejection. She rejects the King of England. However, she does be like, hey, I do want to be married, but I'm not trying to be a mistress.
Mm-hmm.
And then saying, your wife I cannot be, both in respect of mine own unworthiness, and also because you have a queen already. Your mistress I will not be. So then, this incites a 6-year debate,
mm-hmm.
during which Henry and Boleyn, they sing Bad Idea from The Musical Waitress, and they court discreetly for 6 years.
That's so funny. If you haven't heard Bad Idea, it's basically this back and forth between the characters of, like, should we not?
We're both married.
But
this is
should
bad.
We?
But our marriage, one of the marriages is toxic, but the other one's just a man being annoying.
Yeah, as they are.
Yeah, and then, as what happens, Anne discovers she's pregnant in early 1533.
Oh, goodness.
And keep in mind, the blessing of the Pope is very, very important at this time because the Catholic faith and influence is still very prevalent in Europe. Because mm-hmm. when the schism happens, they get, like, territorial with it, and England gets caught up in it. So they're still very, very... The power of the Pope is still very important. And on January 25th, 1533, Henry and Anne Boleyn have a secret wedding ceremony led by Thomas Cranmer, the Archbishop of Canterbury.
goodness.
I also read somewhere that he was like, this marriage is illegitimate. And then 5 days later, he's like, this marriage is actually legitimate. So I wonder what persuaded him. So the following June, a lavish coronation ceremony is held in honor of the new queen. And in September of 1533, Queen Anne gave birth to daughter Elizabeth I. Keep an eye on her. She's important. The only child with Boleyn to survive past infancy. She had Anne has a stillborn baby, and then, or she actually has two stillborn babies, excuse me. And then in 1534, Archbishop Cranmer again, he's like, okay, so your first marriage, it's invalid. There's this quote in Leviticus that's like, if you have your first wife, she was gonna be married to your brother, and now you're married to your brother's betrothed, that means you won't have a son. There's something in Leviticus that that arguably suggests that. So then that's why they're like, oh, okay, because that's why she's like, well, he couldn't, like, Catherine of Aragon couldn't produce a son, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So Henry's like, okay, well, we don't need Rome. The Church of England is this thing that can replace any ties we had to the Catholic faith. And then 2 years later, in 1536, Catherine passes away. Okay, next in my notes, I have British bad bleeps hated Anne. Addison Rae, little shardy. The thing Anne did correct that was good is that she advocated for the improvement of quality of life for the poor, but the public was still like, "Ayo, Henry, like, what happened to Catherine? We liked her." And they're like,
while the other girl is fighting for them.
While the other girl's out here being like, let's, yeah. The other reason they didn't really like her is that she was this foreign princess who's now the queen, wearing French fashions to court, and everyone's like, okay, go off, I guess. Which, that never works out well. When you wear French fashions to court and you're a foreign princess who's betrothed to a king, that's generally starting to get some, like, pushback.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Marie Antoinette. But Anne still is not able to have the son that Henry's really wanting. Henry wants a son so bad so he can have, like, a male heir to the throne. And Henry, again, just being super resourceful. Such a, like, kind, considerate, intelligent, wise, witty, show-stopping, never-been-done-before man. Turns to some of the ladies in Queen Anne Boleyn's court, much as Queen Anne Boleyn was once in the court. And one of these women's name is Jane Seymour. Jane Seymour is also Anne Boleyn's second cousin.
Goodness gracious.
Because messy family trees here. So, unlike Queen Catherine before, so Catherine of Aragon, like, was kind of like, okay, Henry, you're a little man-ho, but I'm gonna turn the other cheek, look the other direction, because, like, he's the king, and, like, she, like, at that time, I think there was some comfort being like, well, what's he gonna do, replace me? Yeah, that's literally what's gonna happen. But Boleyn was like, once a cheater, always a cheater, and now she's, like, speaking out against Henry's promiscuity, and she's becoming increasingly jealous, being very vocal about his adulterous behavior.
Oh, gosh.
And she's like, I don't care, like, I can give you a son, all this stuff, and then she's like, where do you go at night? And then Henry's like, not being able to live the life he wants to lead. So then, in return, he gets mad. He gets mad at Anne Boleyn for asking where he goes at night when he's literally, how does John Green put it? Scootily pooping?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So the marriage starts falling apart. Anne Boleyn gives birth to a stillborn male child in January of 1536, and at that time, Henry decides this is it, that's the final straw. So, he's like, okay, this Jane Seymour is promising, that's my plan C. More.
Wow.
That was good. And then he seeks out an annulment for his marriage to Boleyn, and then the easiest way he thinks about doing this is to obviously say she's committed some high crimes. So he has Anne Boleyn detained at the Tower of London on several false charges, including but not limited to adultery, incest, and conspiracy.
Goodness gracious.
So Thomas Cromwell, who's the great-great-grand-uncle of that little rascal we talk about with King Charles I.
Yeah.
He's the chief minister to the king, and he used to be friends with Anne Boleyn, but now he's, like, it's believed that he's the one who plotted her downfall. So Anne Boleyn goes to trial on May 15th, 1536, and in the court she is said to remain level-headed and articulate, denying all these allegations that are, again, false. 4 days later, on May 19th, 1536, she's unanimously convicted in a court of her peers. I read somewhere, but I couldn't find where it said it. It was like the court of peers was not who they said they were. Mm-hmm. There were like people in there that she like knew. There was like some like great uncle or something. There was someone who like I think she was supposed to like be betrothed to.
Mm-hmm.
That's not like, again, I can't confirm that, but I feel like I read that somewhere in my research and I couldn't find it later. But, like, again, that might be something suspicious that happened with it.
Yeah.
So, Henry's marriage is annulled and declared invalid because of her crimes. And the same day, she's taken to the Tower Green in London, where she's going to be beheaded by a French swordsman. On the scaffolds, she delivers this speech. "I am come hither to accuse no man, nor to speak anything of that whereof I am accused and condemned to die. But I pray God save the king and send him long to reign over you, for a gentler nor a more merciful prince was there never.
Oh, gosh.
And to me he was ever a good, a gentle, and sovereign lord." She also says, "I take my leave of the world and of you all, and I heartily desire you all to pray for me. O Lord, have mercy on me. To God I commend my soul." That was her final speech.
Well, shoot.
And now what happens? She is blindfolded. In a swift motion, she's beheaded. She's buried in an unmarked grave, because who needs honor in such a time? And within days of this execution, like days after this, he beheads his second wife, he marries Jane Seymour.
Mm-hmm.
Jane Seymour will also like later just die of natural causes.
Yeah.
Which is ironic, because then he has to have another wife that he'll divorce, and then another wife that he'll behead, and then another wife who outlives him. Good for her. We stan Catherine Parr. However, remember that daughter we talked about, Elizabeth I?
Yes.
So she later emerged as England's most revered queens, and according to BBC, this is what they have to say about Elizabeth I. Elizabeth I is one of England's greatest monarchs, perhaps the greatest. Her forces defeated the Spanish Armada and saved England from invasion. She reinstated Protestantism and forged an England that was a strong and independent nation. And I think that's probably the greatest legacy of King Henry, is the fact that, like, he at least was the father of Elizabeth I. Because can anyone tell me anything that, like, King Henry, like, successfully did on the level that Elizabeth I did?
Silence.
Anyways, that is the story of Queen Anne. Kind of a boss-ass bee, if you ask me.
Yeah.
I think I appreciate her speaking out against the men who tried to silence her. And ultimately, the patriarchy, like, did still win. However, this was, like, half a millennia ago now. So, hopefully, things have changed.
Hopefully.
And the patriarchy is not as toxic, or at least if the patriarchy is not as toxic, it hasn't just changed forms into ways that are still manipulated by society today. But if the patriarchy still is as such, I hope we can still go past it and believe it when women condemn promiscuous behavior that's unfair to them, especially when it comes to domestic partnerships and caring for children.
Yep,
okay. And that's...
hold on, one second. I just want to point out that I, like, never know what Blake's going to say after, like, how he'll tie it all in. So, when he gets to the part in the episode where he gets, like, political and stuff, and he's, like, coming at people, favorite part. And I literally, I'm in awe of silence, because I'm like, yes, Blake, yes.
Catherine's my hype girl. Also, the thing we were talking about this episode is that we needed to start being, like, Oh, it's the guitar for me. Oh, well, yeah. For King Henry, it's the Six Wives for me. And that's all I have to say about that.
We're going
to
be doing that for every single thing.
Every single thing. All right. Now, it's time for Catherine to get all political. Sit back, relax. Grab more snacks because stuff's about to hit the fan.
Yep.
Catherine's going to do something fun here, so I'm going to stall for a second. I bet none of you see what's coming. She's going to give it a shot. Ready? Give us your best.
Why is it so big? No.
Okay, but that, like, didn't sound awful. You didn't do the last one. That's really out of tune. Okay, beside the point. Come back.
I've been
cello
for, like, 3 years. I
should know this. Okay, we'll come back and enjoy the history of the UN.
Okay, welcome back. So today I'm going to be talking about the history of the United Nations, better known as the UN. So for the sake of clarity and organization, I'm going to be breaking the history of the UN down by a couple segments. So the first part is going to be called the origins. So the United Nations we know today was birthed from the ashes of World War II. But its true inception in the minds of many historians is a couple decades earlier, during World War I. So after World War I, the global agenda was like super concerned with two things. One, punishing Germany, and two, making sure that a war of that magnitude would never happen again. And every country kind of took a lot of different approaches to both of these goals, and one of which happened to be the League of Nations. And just a little PSA, when we were like trying to decide what we were gonna do, like really wanted to do the League of Nations.
I thought we could like tag team it, because like I always go first. If I talk about the League of Nations, we could like evolve into it. But then I was like, I would never do what Catherine could do with it, so it's okay.
So the history of the League of Nations is basically birthed from the 28th US president, Woodrow Wilson. He was the creator and leading advocate of the League of Nations, and this idea basically was supposed to essentially monitor Germanic disarmament, prevent wars, and basically just work as this global diplomacy hub. However, because America was like super isolationist at this time, and there was a lot of like internal battles between Congress and the president, we reverted back to isolationism, and we did not want anything to do with like this League of Nations, because we were like, listen, a lot of people died and we don't even want to be involved with this. So the United States was basically out of the idea that the United States created. And so because there was like no direction really, it kind of like failed. And we see this most prominently with World War II happening. Because the League of Nations
was a World War II?
Yeah. I know, crazy. So basically,
I say as I like pimp out a book about World War II I'm reading right now. All the Light We Cannot See, so good.
Yep. Yeah. And so basically, yeah, the League of Nations was super like weak, and all their voting had to be unanimous. I had no idea about that, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. Literally every country had to agree, which
if there's one thing countries can do
is disagree.
It's disagree.
So, yeah, that did not work out. So, after World War II, it was clear that diplomacy and multilateral approaches would be the best in international, like, anything. Because if that doesn't happen, then global peace and, you know, avoiding abuses of war would not happen either. So, the first conference of the United Nations occurred in San Francisco on June of 1945. And it was led by Britain, China, the Soviet Union, and the United States. This is now referred to as UNCIO, just kind of cute, you know? I don't know why I thought it was cute, but I did.
Is it the security? No, I was. Is that a dumb question? Is that the Security Council?
We'll get to it.
Okay.
So the initial conference counted with 51 membership countries. These countries heavily debated the Charter of the United Nations, but it was eventually ratified on October 24th, 1945, with the following four goals. So this is where I get to the part two of the United Nations history, which I like to call UN in practice. So the four goals of the UN are: 1, maintain international peace and security.
Mm-hmm.
2, develop relations among nations.
Yeah.
3, achieve international cooperation in solving internal problems.
As you do.
And 4, be a center for harmonizing the actions of nations and attainment of common ends.
Most definitely.
Okay, so that's just kind of, okay, can we talk about 4 quick? Be a center of harmonizing the actions. Mm-hmm. Who wrote this? Beautiful. Poetic. I love it. So, much like caucuses, like, you know how congressional caucuses are, like, broken up into, like, the Environmental Council?
Yeah.
So, the UN is broken down like that as well. So, they have a bunch of different sections in them where they, like, address international problems, basically. Like, they have a Security Council that you were talking about. They also have a couple councils talking about just, like, the Secretariat, International Court of Justice, the Truanship Council, Economic and Social Council, General Assembly. So they're kind of just broken down into those caucuses that can, like, better address issues. So now we get into the kind of critique stuff, I guess. So over the years, the role of the UN has expanded from an organization that focuses on peace and security to one that includes a wide range of global concerns. Today, the UN provides solutions for problems related to healthcare, the environment, criminal justice, and a lot of, like, immigration dilemmas. So, though many support, like, the general ideas of the United Nations, others believe the organization may be overstepping their boundaries. The UN has also faced criticism for promoting globalization, not being effective enough, backing provocative policies, providing controversial health options, being too bureaucratic, giving certain countries more power than others, and spending too much money.
The only one of those where I'm like, okay, yeah, I can get on that, is giving certain countries more power.
Yeah, for
because,
sure. That's where I wanted to go with this one, by the way.
And there was another one I want to comment on. It was, what was the second one? What was the second one you said?
The second one was not being effective enough.
Yeah, what?
Yeah.
What if you're just, like, to what extent is, like,
Okay, so my problem with the United Nations is kind of a mix of those two. So my problem with it is, like, the United Nations gives too much power to a lot of countries, and that causes them to not be effective. So, like, for example, when you look at Venezuela and our economic sanctions against them that are literally unilateral and are high-key, like, not good, like, we should be facing some type of UN, like, pushback, but we're not because we're placed with too much power.
Another thing I noticed, too, is that, like, even Nikki Haley, who's our former ambassador to the UN and Clemson graduate, mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't even seem to like the UN.
Yeah.
It really just seems like, and now she's also the former governor of South Carolina, but I'm just kind of like,
yeah.
She even seems to hate it.
So, now I'm going to talk about UN failures, because I'm nothing but not a cynic. So, they've had a lot of failures, actually. So, they've had the oil to food program. This initiative was designed to allow Iraq to sell oil through the UN in exchange for food and medicine, but accusations surfaced that much of the money was funneled to the Iraqi government and to UN officials. So, a lot of corruption. And then there's been a lot of sexual abuse allegations as well. In 2005, UN peacekeepers were accused of rape or paying for sex in the Republic of Congo. Similar allegations of sexual misconduct were also reported in Cambodia, Haiti, and a lot of other countries. They also had the 1994 Rwanda mission. I don't know if you've heard of this,
but
it was basically this huge undertaking that the UN tried to stop the Rwandan genocide. But the Hutus slaughtered nearly 1 million members of the Tutsi minority. My gosh, I can't talk today.
Mm-hmm.
So they've had a lot of scandal, but they've also had a lot of, like, wins. So they've actually been pretty successful in providing food to, like, 90 million people in over 75 countries. And, like, I know I talked a little bit about Venezuela, but they have been providing a lot of aid for Venezuela as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're protecting human rights with 80 treaties and declarations, one of these being the Geneva Convention, which is my favorite one of them. But just, why do I keep going back to Venezuela? I don't know.
You love talking about Venezuela.
I love talking
You really do.
I know. But just a quick fun fact, the United States is currently in violation of, like, two sectors of the Geneva Convention.
Oh.
Yep. And has the UN said anything? No. Also, Saudi Arabia, when we, you know, actively sell them guns.
But we get oil.
But we get oil. Yeah. And then there's been a lot of reports lately that since we're selling Saudi Arabia guns, they're actually ending up in, like, terrorist organizations. Like, there is...
How are we to know that if we give guns to territories in the Middle East that they could end up in the hands of terrorists?
There's been reports...
That's never happened before.
I'm going back to Venezuela, I'm sorry. But there's been reports from Venezuela with Houthi rebels that we've given guns to Saudi Arabia still, and they've ended up over in Venezuela with Houthi rebels, and they're... There's literally a report of this Houthi rebel sitting in an American-made tank and saying death to America. From a Saudi Arabian sold... That, yeah. Fun fact, if you didn't know that.
Wow.
So, yes. Basically, the history of the United Nations is predicated on the League of Nations, which was supposed to be this global peacekeeping thing.
I do say we do have to give them credit for not having... We haven't had a World War III yet.
Okay, do you want to hear my theory? It's controversial. It's really controversial.
It's going on the pod.
Oh. Okay, we'll see what happens. Okay, so
Give me the theory.
Okay, so the theory is that...
Just preface it. It's a theory.
Yeah.
And we love theories here.
Yeah. Okay, so the election that a certain someone wants to delay. Mm-hmm. If you know, like, the four indicators, or the 14 indicators of fascism.
Yes.
One of them is, like, basically, like, moving elections. I don't know if it's specific
to one,
but...
Can we also talk about, like, or just, like, the figurehead of the government tampering with the election period? Like, when Putin changed the laws.
Right, right. He literally changed the laws so he could be president.
A few years back, yeah.
Yeah, that was, like, in, what, 2015?
Yeah, or something like that.
Yep. And then, so, if the elections... won't happen, or the elections are delayed or tampered with, because also remember, the President of the United States literally changed who the Postmaster General was.
Oh.
To someone that's, like, a Trump fanatic.
Oh.
So, because a lot of mail-in voting and absentee voting will happen. So, you know, once that happens, we could be facing a Venezuelan-type situation with, like, Maduro and, the... recognized Democratic candidate,
mm-hmm.
that's like, oh my gosh, he stole the election, or like, oh my gosh, he's delaying the election. That could happen, and then we could be facing another situation that's like World War II, where we want to like address it, but we don't because everybody's scared, because we're super militarized. So that's my theory. And the UN will do, say it with me.
Nothing. Wow. That's also an interesting point where they're just, like, they bring about globalism, and I'm, like, it's almost, like, but here's the other thing. Did globalism make a supranationalist organization, or did a supranationalist organization make globalism? Globalization, excuse me.
That's a good question.
Like, which one came first? I'm gonna argue, also, when we talk about things like the Berlin Conference and the Scramble for Africa, that, like, the figureheads who been in power and have these like somehow like seemingly diplomatic relations, like they always like that comes with globalism.
Yeah, it's like a byproduct.
Globalization. Why do you keep saying globalism? I really can't talk today.
It's okay. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. You won't have to worry about my tweets as president. Did you see that tweet today?
Yep.
Okay.
I did see it.
Biden tweeted it. Okay. So we should, like, wrap this baby up.
Yep, I just want to let you guys know that was a really bad script. But, you know, it's okay.
Oh, no, I was here for it.
We talked about Venezuela.
We talked about the theory.
It made my heart happy.
We talked about, like, the theories and everything. And with that, too, just, wow. The world's kind of messy. The world is messy.
A little bit, yeah.
Today, what did we learn today? Today we learned that men suck.
Bitch,
and that the man sucks, and that's this episode. This episode is entitled Mr. Worldwide because the UN is worldwide.
Yep.
But, or is it?
Yeah.
That's
also, the debate. Fun fact, no African countries occupy a security seat on the council.
Do any South American countries?
I'm not sure.
Do any Antarctic countries?
Okay.
Antarctica countries? How about them? What about the...
What about the polar bears?
What about the polar bears?
And the penguins?
Polar bear for president 2020.
For real.
Don't write that in. That's okay.
Yeah,
it's got that okay, in. Now that's the point in the pod where we're just like having thinking to remind out loud. Like we're thinking out loud. We're reminding ourselves that humanity is the worst. We need to end on a happy note. What's a happy note?
The happy note. I graduate this year. No more high school. That's a happy note.
But then you have to okay.
We're no, really that's a happy hear. Note.
I'm literally just going to Google right now, what is some good
news?
Yeah. Oh, I got John Krasinski. I really should have thought that through. Someone tell me good news. The Today Show is going to tell me good news. A teen forsaken as a baby helps senior dogs find forever home, just like I did.
Oh. It was kind of sad, though.
Yeah, that is sad. Tim McGraw surprises frontline nurses who think they're having a work call. A service dog helps women get through cancer treatments thanks to the dog super suit.
Aww. That's a pretty good note.
Tyler Perry donates grocery store gift card to Atlanta people in need. Sanitation worker says getting accepted to Harvard Law was the most surreal moment.
What, like it's hard? Kidding.
That's all. Kidding. Okay, we do gotta wrap this puppy up.
Goodbye.
But yeah, thank you for watching this episode of His Story Time. We hope that it didn't end as gloomy and doomy as we'd hoped it would, and we hope you can tune in next time. We do have an exciting announcement about like the future of this podcast though. So at college, we know the pod will continue. It's gonna continue because we have the means to do so. We figured out, we secured a plan so that we can still produce content even though we're gonna be like 27 hours away by car. So no, it's all good. Okay, well thank you for tuning in and we'll see you next time.